Thanks very much, Khan, and I hope everyone's been enjoying their lunch. I've enjoyed my lunch because I've had 3 months on a low cholesterol diet, and that was that expired yesterday when I had my blood test. So I haven't got the result yet, but I enjoyed the chicken on the skin on the chicken and the sauce, which I ate. So lunches can be fun. Where are we here? I want to learn to operate this thing. Here we are. I want to run you through over 20 minutes, which will be a difficult ask, this sort of road plan. I want to go back to the National Water Initiative, NWI, because that's where I start from always. The National Water Initiative lays out what the framework for water reform should be in Australia. I want to tell you what the National Water Commission has been saying about overallocation. I want to pick up a couple of issues that I think are necessary to understand the overallocation question. And then I want to talk about how water planning works. And that's how water planning works in the National Water Initiative, because that's essential to understand overallocation, to understand how water planning works. And then the body of what I'm doing, this sounds pretty formidable for 20 minutes, doesn't it, is a dozen different ways that we could tackle overallocation. First of all, some definitions. Under the NWI, it's really important to understand that there isn't a right to take a fixed volume of water. And that obviously applies in drought years. What it is in reality is the right to take a percentage share of what's available that year. So an entitlement from which we get the concept of overallocation, and in entitlements may have been issued beyond a sustainable level of extraction, but allocations each year within that entitlement should match what's available. And that set of definitions there is worth running your eye over, because it's sometimes grossly oversimplified about what overallocation is. Overallocation can be looked at in the first definition there. If all the entitlements were exercised at once, then total extractions that year would exceed environmentally sustainable levels of extraction. The National Water Initiative has each of the three ways in which governments can influence water management, and we like to present it as a triangle like this of three mutually supportive ways of going about managing water: water planning, which I'll be emphasising today, water markets, which are really important for allocating what is available, and water regulation, the way governments can sort of set the rules for the markets and for water planning. So what does the National Water Initiative say? That's already paraphrasing it, but I'll paraphrase it even more briefly. It says it is time that we eliminated overallocation in Australia. That's what the first one's all about. It says it is time to deliver on all the previous promises that had been made to COAG, the Council of Australian Governments, to do it, and they date back to the 90s, and still there is overallocation that hasn't been addressed. The National Water Initiative says that it's important to deal with overallocation via NWI-consistent water planning processes, and water planning under the NWI has a special meaning. Very difficult to summarise, but I'll try. It's about getting all the parties with an interest in water around the table, getting all the evidence on the table about what's available and what the environmental needs are, and coming to an agreement, a plan for over the next, say, 10 years, how the water will be allocated, how the water will be shared between the environment and consumption, and within the consumptive pool between different users. It also says, the National Water Initiative also says, that the environmental entitlements and consumptive entitlements should have the same statutory protection, or same statutory status, if you like. And it says that we need to be very clear in our water plans, NWI-consistent water plans, about who bears the risk. And the risk has been assigned in the National Water Initiative according to a particular formula about whether governments assume the risk, or the federal and state governments share the risk, or irrigators take the risk, or implicitly the environment takes the risk. So the NWI has a lot to say about overallocation, but I guess I'd come back to the very first line on that rather busy slide, and that is that the NWI says it is time to act. Here's a picture of the issue that we're discussing today. If the glass is all the water that's available, it can be divided up into consumptive water and environmental water. It's expressed in shares, not volumes, a really important point. As I said right at the outset, there isn't a right to take a set volume of water and thus starve the environment. What the NWI entitles people to is a share of what's available. But I'd particularly ask you to look at the hatched bit across the middle of the glass of water there. It's not a hard black line. There are choices that have to be made, social choices that have to be made about where that line should be. And so I'm often asked, well, can't we take the politics out of water? And my answer is, I don't think we can. I mean, I'd like to as much as anyone else, but I don't think we can. And here's my reasoning. Ultimately, there are a lot of social, that is quintessentially political choices that have to be made about that hatched bit between the environment and the consumptive use of water. And here are some examples, just to make it real. We have to answer the question, well, which of the almost infinite number of environmental assets are we going to nurture? Think of a river, and it's got red gums and fish hatchings and bird nestings and all sorts of things. We need to identify which of those we're going to nurture. We'll then ask, well, how much of it? How much of that red gum forest? How often are we going to have a nesting or hatching event, and so on? And there are all sorts of social, economic, and indigenous issues as well that need to be added to those environmental questions. So the bottom line of this slide is the bottom line of my thinking, and that is that decisions, yes, they should be science-informed, but they shouldn't be determined by science. They can't be determined by science. Government has to take a role, or there needs to be a process that is satisfactory to the community to make those choices and judgments and trade-offs. The National Water Commission does a biennial assessment of progress, and we issued one a few months ago. That is, every 2 years, how's the National Water Initiative going? And it's a weighty sort of document, but it says three simple things about overallocation. We need to reduce that overallocation of water resources. The issue is still hanging around since the early 90s. It gets up everyone's nose, whether you're an environmentalist or a consumptive user of water. Governments are troubled by it. Communities are troubled by it. We've talked about it long enough. We need to do something. We also said, the Commission in its biennial assessment, that water planning and the science that underpins that is not always as good as it could be. And the concept I have in my mind is that the science that we use should be the best available science and well plugged into the planning and decision-making process. And thirdly, we should be improving the management of environmental water, which is easy to say, but there's a lot more to that than might appear. What we meant there is the original concept under the National Water Initiative was, I think, almost an inspiring vision for environmental interests. It was that wherever we were, whatever water system we were talking about in Australia, there would be an environmental manager who was well recognised, the identity was clear, well resourced, had all the skills, had the science available, had credibility and respect, and could do the job. And yet, when I travel about Australia, I often ask people, well, who is the local environmental manager here? And in the majority of times, people can't answer that question. And that seems to me to be a very telling point about the failure to deliver that vision about quality environmental management of water. A couple of issues about overallocation before I get to ways we could deal with it. We've been emphasising from the Commission's point of view that there is no nationally adopted definition of overallocation or sustainable levels of extraction. And that's not just because we have tidy minds and we like everything to be tightly defined, but more importantly for the second reason there. There is no nationally consistent method for how to approach it. Different states have different approaches to dealing with sustainable levels of extraction, and I'll come to some of those differences in a moment. We need a much more coherent, common, shared approach among the different states and territories about how to tackle sustainable levels of extraction, what it means, and the implication of that over allocation. Water planning. I said I'd come back to this question of NWI consistent water planning. It is a pretty simple concept in essence, and this slide, although it tends to have run over the screen a bit, I'm sorry, but what it's essentially saying is this, that there are four steps to it. Step one, identify what it is we're aiming to sustain. What are the environmental assets that we're aiming to sustain? In fact, you might be able to see it better on the next slide. Step two, identify, particularly using science, hydrology and ecology, what water is needed to do that job. Having identified the assets that we're going for, and I talked about some of the judgmental questions involved in that before, how big an asset, how often, what level of risk and so on, having identified those things, determine just how much water we need for it. Thirdly, make transparent the trade-offs. We do make choices all the time about which assets and how often and how much and so on, but that needs to be made transparent. That's a very important part of good NWI-consistent water planning. And then fourthly, adaptively manage, which means observe what's happening, and if there are serious environmental problems emerging, you deal with it. So that, in essence, is the simplified Ken version of how water planning for the environment should work. Which gets me to, are we over-allocated? And my answer, sadly, has to be, well, probably we are, but it's very hard to say so analytically. And I guess one thing I've been trying to emphasise is that we need to have a system in Australia flowing from the NWI which is analytical, which is evidence-based, which is systematic, which is defensible, and which people have confidence in. And it's therefore painful to have to say that we can't be absolutely certain. We can't be, I think we can be certain that there is over-allocation, but we can't be clear about where the over-allocation is, the degree of over-allocation, and the implications for the environment. It is true that all states have now substantially introduced the right planning processes, NWI-consistent planning processes, but it's sadly the case that there aren't all that many completed water plans that have emerged from that, or there are still quite a few that are taking too long to come out. CSIRO has been doing some good work in the Murray-Darling Basin, as many of you would know. They have developed a good model for determining water availability. It's sometimes misnamed a study of sustainable levels of extraction, but it's not. It's about water availability, but it doesn't declare whether something is over-allocated. And to be very fair to some states, I talked about state-by-state differences in processes. Some states argue, with some solidity behind their argument, this. They say that where there has been a transparent NWI-consistent planning process, which has resulted in a certain set of entitlements being issued and the plan is out there and it's in place and solid, there is, by definition, no allocation. Why is that? Because the environmental trade-off has been made transparent and it has been found to be acceptable, and the allocations, therefore, do not exceed what has been deemed to be environmentally sustainable. So in one sense, it's a circular argument, but in another sense, it's very valid that the community, the interest groups, have come to a view informed by science about whether the amount of water that can be made available is sustainable. I'll just flick over that. This slide and the next slide is really a table of contents for the remainder of what follows. I'm now going to go through the many ways, I think there are 12 or 13 different ways, that we could respond to over-allocation. And anyone who wants to follow up can go back and have a look at these in much more detail. But I'm going through each of the 13 individually. The first way is to do what is done in plans which are in place across most of the states now, and that is to allocate less per entitlement holder. And that's essentially the way, for example, New South Wales is handling things. Whatever the entitlement, what is actually allocated season by season, year by year, is at the sustainable level or what's available. And the little man at the bottom is trying to indicate just how difficult this is on a scale of 1 to 10. This is not terribly difficult, and you can see that if we did allocate less per entitlement holder, the environment benefits. A second option is to invest to improve irrigation efficiency, in other words, to find additional water from efficiencies. And, of course, they would need to be directed to the environment. Degree of difficulty 4, not as simple as it looks, though, because in many senses those savings would have flowed to the environment anyway. They are return flows. On the other hand, the savings which might go to groundwater or elsewhere are probably not well targeted towards environmental problems. And a subset of that, we can share the savings rather than putting them all to the environment with irrigation or with urban areas. Degree of difficulty 3. A third option is to invest to improve the efficiency of environmental waterings, by which I mean that even though environmental assets are natural and some people are a bit uncomfortable sometimes about having artificial interventions, they can be, those assets can be much better cared for sometimes by unnatural interventions, engineering infrastructure, for example, a levee bank around the red gum forest to retain water within it and so on. That's a way of adding to consumption without reducing the impact on the environment. We can extract more environmental benefits from consumptive water. And the example I've given there is return flows from irrigation to the environment. You can direct irrigation drainage, if you like, to much more specific environmental uses rather than just returning those tailings elsewhere. You can, degree of difficulty 4, buy back entitlements on the market and redirect them to the environment. And this is a very popular option, one which I certainly favour myself. I'm not saying it's the only one that I favour in this group. In fact, all of these have some application potentially. But buying them back on the environment will improve things, and that will improve environmental shares, or a sub-option, share between the environment and consumption. And why would you do that? Well, because if you bought back those entitlements but didn't give it all to the environment, you would be improving the likelihood of those remaining entitlement holders receiving something closer to their expectations. So everyone wins on that front. The sixth option is to revise the water plans as they expire and then reset the entitlements. And again, this is very consistent with the National Water Initiative. Many plans, particularly in New South Wales, had about 10 years to run when the National Water Initiative was signed. And the expectation originally was that those plans would run their course at the end of that time with all the new data, including climate change data, on the table. The whole planning process would commence again, and there would be a new set of entitlements issued between the environment and consumptive users and among consumptive users as well. Doing it that way avoids sovereign risk, which is something I'm going to emphasise. Sovereign risk is a really important issue for planning, including planning for the environment. But this whole process does take years to complete, but degree of difficulty 2, because it's going to happen anyway. You can compulsorily acquire certain entitlements, degree of difficulty 9. For example, you could compulsorily acquire entitlements in valleys which are shown to be absolutely grossly overallocated, or where there are stranded irrigators, where someone a long way along a channel, for example, has had all his or her neighbours sell out, and that stranded irrigator is a very high cost operator. You could consider compulsorily acquiring certain entitlements. You could, and this is very difficult indeed, retire whole districts, less viable irrigation districts. But you would probably choose high salinity areas or very low efficiency irrigation areas, but it's not something, it's not a choice that governments would relish. And why not? Because individuals in those areas would have extremely strong views about that, and we can understand that. So sometimes what might seem pretty easy and pretty obvious from a long way away behind a desk somewhere doesn't quite make the same sense to the people who are directly affected. You can, or you could, compulsorily acquire, say, a percentage of entitlements across the board, and my colleague Mike Young has suggested this a month or so ago. And that would be difficult, but Mike has argued very well that there are some pluses to it as well, but I assess that as having a degree of difficulty 9, particularly because it's a compulsory acquisition, and I think you would find the same sort of emotional and financial reaction of the stakeholders, even if it was only a compulsory acquisition and if there were some of the sweeteners that Mike has designed into his idea. You can reduce target levels of reliability or security, pretty self-explanatory, but it's just another way of saying that a property right which was worth a certain amount is about to be reduced overnight, and really that's a book entry, if you like. You could suspend water plans arbitrarily revise entitlements, and this is another proposal that Mike is talking about, and we'll probably hear more about that now, I expect, Mike. But it raises the question of sovereign risk, and it certainly would be a difficult one to have the community accept. You can regulate water use to reduce consumption, and an example I'm often given is a ban on rice or cotton unless they reach a target level of water efficiency. Degree of difficulty 9, partly because it's a mandatory intervention, and partly because it would be quite difficult to do. And finally, obviously, you could simply lower our set of community environmental aspirations. So, which is best? As I think I said a little while ago, all of these could potentially play a part, but some are much more difficult than others. The thing I particularly wanted to concentrate on is in that second bullet there. Some of these ideas are quite radical. I'm not proposing any of these ideas, but I wanted to sort of put out the full range of possibilities to say that there are many ways of skinning this cat. But some, in that second line there, some of these affect property rights. And I'm raising a very yellow caution flag there that property rights are valuable. The owners of those property rights will understandably be feel very strongly about an impact on their property rights. The communities that are affected by mandatory changes to property rights will have strong views as well. The finance community, our bankers, will have serious concerns about that as well. So property rights is something that I would leave right up there for us all to think about as we think about those various options. And my last slide is this. As I think about those options, I've identified 9 principles that I think we, as a community, we as governments across Australia, ought to use as a screen to look at those various options. And they are these, and I'll go through them just a touch laboriously because each of them is terribly important. We set out in the National Water Initiative to maximise water security, and sovereign risk is a way of undoing that centrepiece, that central objective of the NWI. So the first two are closely linked. The third one, whatever we do, some of those options can target, can focus, can give much better results on water use efficiency. And I've talked about both consumptive water use efficiency, usually elicited by prices, but also environmental water use efficiency, which may mean engineering interventions and market interventions to make sure that the water that we do use for the environment is water well used. Principle 4, we should maximise the use of markets. Governments can hold the ring. but it's markets that allocate within that consumptive pool, and sometimes between the consumptive pool and the environmental pool, how best to allocate our scarce water resource. We should be trying to minimise administrative and political discretion, but at the same time, if you can read it right at the bottom of the slide there, I'm strongly urging that we should be maximising local planning participation. And the two aren't really contradictory. I think that people who are affected by planning decisions need to have every opportunity to participate in those decisions, even if they don't have a veto. We should maximise periods of notice, and we should maximise the science that that goes into our NWI consistent water planning. So the bottom line in what I've been saying as I've laid out these various options is this, that there is no argument, I hope, that we should be doing something as a community about over-allocation, and we should be doing something much sooner than we have. It's been around too long. The real argument is about this slide. The real argument is about which is the best option, which are the best options, the best ways of going about it. And my suggestion is that one way of looking at that is to screen them against these sorts of principles to make sure that we choose the best options. So thank you very much.